Hi, this is What You Say in English, Season 3.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another week of What You Say in English, the podcast in which I listen to you and give you my professional feedback. And of course, a little bit more because I'm going to dedicate my time to give advice on other aspects of the Cambridge exams, not only the speaking part, but also other parts of the exam. And this is why our topic of discussion today is going to be about vocabulary. And it's not only vocabulary that will be good for the speaking skills, but also for the writing skills. Not all the sections of the writing, of course, but it will help you build up a good bank of expressions that will come very handy. As you might have read in the episode description, the title of today's episode, it's about polywords, and it's probably a word that you haven't heard before. But after I explain it, it will make a lot of sense. And I will tell you why, from now on, I think it would be a good idea to call it polywords and not really all the wide range of expressions and terms that we use to refer to all these words. But before we get the ball rolling, as many of my students love to say in the speaking exams, I would like to talk about a piece of software that, you know, I love technology. I always like to try the newest thing. And of course, when it comes to teaching, I'm always there. And I love checking out anything that can help me craft better lessons in classes. You may have heard about Elsa Speak. Elsa Speak is a system created some time ago. I can't remember exactly when, but I remember that I got an email way back in the beginning when they started out, and I thought it was a cool, fancy piece of app that you would download to your mobile phone, and the app would analyze your speech, and it would, let's say, create like a plan, an action plan, to help you improve on your pronunciation. But it was basically based on pronunciation. I remember that I posted something on LinkedIn, and I was curious about how the software did the magic, because I understand that, of course, I told you last week, I think it was last week, that I use this piece of software called Descript, and what Descript does is that it analyzes your voice and creates a clone of your voice. It's called Overdub. And it's very interesting because you have to train it. You have to record quite some time, at least to get optimal results, you have to record at least 2 hours. And even after that, the kind of recording that you get, you heard it last week, the kind of recording that you get is still a little awkward. But I love technology. I think there's a lot of potential. The Descript, for example, has a lot of stock voices. You can type in actually the introduction to my show. I do it with Descript. I just use one of their stock voices and I type anything. That welcome to season three, episode three. Of course, that's done. I don't pay anybody, but I think that's enough with the money I pay to Descript, because the license is okay for all the things that you can do with the software. I think it's amazing, but I'm getting away. I'm going off the tangent here. What I want to talk about is Elsa as a piece of application software. I think it was cool in the beginning, and I think it's cool, for example, that you can hone your pronunciation skills. This software listens to you and pinpoints exactly the different sounds, and it focuses on individual sounds. But when it comes to pronunciation, for example, there are many more elements that we analyze, especially in a globalized world. I think the standard which Elsa is built upon is a little bit unrealistic. And let me explain why, because I think this is a very delicate matter. For many years, many experts have fought against the idea that the ultimate goal for any language learner is to sound like a native speaker. The problem of sounding like a native speaker, and I've said this 1,000 times, is that the whole concept is fraught with dead ends. It's very difficult. It's very hard unless you were born in a place or lived for quite a long time in a place, you will not be able to attain that level of pronunciation. Let's call it pronunciation, because I don't want to call it perfection, because it's not about perfection. honestly. But I think that deep down, the idea from the people from ELSA, I think it's pretty cool. I think it encourages independent learning, because otherwise you would be needing a teacher or someone else, a speaking coach, someone who can help you improve on your pronunciation skills. But I would say that pronunciation is more. I mean, if you have been listening to my podcast, you would know that when it comes to exams, pronunciation, we only pay attention to three things. We pay attention to intonation, stress, and that stress could be either word stress and sentence stress. And we also analyze individual sounds. And I think the software, the app, focuses only on individual sounds and how you fluently link those sounds. Also, another thing that the app focuses on is connected speech. And according to many experts, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, according to many experts, connected speech is actually a hindrance. Let me spell that word for you. H-I-N-D-R-A-N-C-E. Hindrance. It's like an obstacle. So hindrance is an obstacle. So it's like an obstacle for communication. I would say that more often than not, I always have to tone down the way I talk, because low-level students don't understand what I say. So I have to try to enunciate the words a lot better, be careful with the words. Basically, that's grading your language. And I've done it for so many years now that sometimes even my friends back in the States, they usually say that I sound condescending, like I talk like a teacher. And it's something that sometimes I have to switch off the teacher mode. But going back to the idea that I was mentioning, I think the ELSA app is a wonderful idea. I think it's a clever idea. And I think, for example, that artificial intelligence and virtual reality and augmented reality, AR, I think they're great tools to really improve on language skills. But I think they're going overboard, and I think they're emphasizing, they're reinforcing not very healthy ideas about language, about learning languages or speaking English in this case, because I truly think that you don't need to have a very native-like sounding accent to be a great speaker of English. Many times, and if you've been following my podcast, you would have heard me gushing over all the people that have done incredibly well, and they don't have a native-like sounding accent. I'm talking about this because ELSA has been in the market for quite a while, and because recently this week I got another email. And they were inviting me to try a new addition to their catalog. And it was a speech analyzer. Basically, it would tested it very quickly. And I thought it was interesting because they included other aspects. They included aspects of fluency, pronunciation, intonation, vocabulary range, and grammatical resource. Pretty much what examiners do in exam. And I thought it was interesting. I tried it, of course, with myself. I didn't have anybody else to try it with, but I thought it was interesting. I think, and I would try to contact the people from ELSA and see if I can apply it with the people that send me the recordings, because I think I would be interested to see how the app may offer a different take on my feedback. If you understand what I'm trying to say, it's basically that I want to see how ELSA can help me build the podcast and see for myself. But that's enough about this, and let's get to the business. Stay tuned. So let's get down to business. The term polywords was actually coined by Michael Lewis in his book, The Lexical Approach. And he defines it as short, fixed phrases whose meaning is often not analyzable from their regular rules of syntax. He included idioms, euphemisms, slang, two- and three-part verbs, you know, what we call phrasal verbs. But I would probably include a lot more than that. I would probably include discourse markers, linkers. We would use fixed phrases, set phrases, and even idioms or expressions like the binomial pairs when you say this and this, like hype and hoopla or hustle and bustle, you know, when you talk about the hustle and bustle of the city. He refers to these polywords as the messiest category. Like single words, these are frequently found in dictionaries. They are usually relatively short. He says that it's two or three words, but I would say that it sometimes is a little more than that. And they may belong to any word class, and the meaning of the whole group may range from immediately apparent or totally different from the component words. One kind of polyword is the phrasal verbs, as I said, and this has featured prominently in language teaching. I would say it's the most teachable of these category of words. Others, I would say, deserve increased attention. And let me give you some examples. We have compounds like taxi rank or record player or continuous assessment. We also have phrasal verbs like put off, look up, or look for. We have discourse markers like of course, on the other hand, all at once, by the way. And we have other fixed expressions like the day after tomorrow or in his element. Now, in the case of the day after tomorrow, for example, it's a full idea. You cannot eliminate or remove any of the parts because you would be losing the meaning of the chunk of the polyword. I mean, we call it polyword because it has many words. But the funny thing is that in other languages, and I'm telling you because I speak Spanish, in Spanish, we only have one word. And for example, the day before yesterday, there's only one word. And that's the whole thing. I mean, it's a whole idea. And in English, we need more than two or three words to create one single idea. So that's what Michael Lewis calls polywords. In the case of the expression in his element, I think it's interesting because there's a variable part. In this case, for example, is the pronoun, the possessive here, when you say in his element. Immediately, we see that the categorization is very, very fuzzy and a matter of interpretation rather than an objective fact. Perhaps the example that I gave before, continuous assessment, is more usually categorized as a fixed collocation. And the day after tomorrow, as I said, is more like a lexical item. But what about at the weekend, for example, which is very typical in British English? In American English, we would say on the weekend. I mean, of course, there's a difference in the preposition, but basically it's the same idea. Perhaps understanding at the weekend is best treated as a fixed item rather than at the preposition and then the weekend. And retaking the example of in his element, if we consider it a polyword, it permits some level of variation. For example, we can say in her element, in their element, in my element. And what I find interesting about this is that it's not a rigid category. It's only useful in ways of grouping things. And I think as a learner, I think it's a lot easier to group things in polywords. I mean, you don't have to worry yourself with other terminology like phrasal verbs and how they work and fixed expressions and how they work. You can only group them as polywords. And I think this is very useful to group them like this. I want to go through different examples and illustrate how these polywords work. Let's listen to the first extract.
So what government gives you is not your rights. It provides a wall, if you will, a security so that you can exercise that which you already possess simply by being human.
The expression that he used was, if you will. And of course, this has nothing to do with the conditional. When we say, if you will, we use it as a phrase to indicate that we have said something that is probably uncommon, metaphorical, or original in a way of saying something. For example, we can use expressions like, so to speak, or in a manner of speaking. Let's listen again.
So what government gives you is not your rights. It provides a wall, if you will.
And you also have to pay attention to the way the intonation changes, because when you say, if you will, it usually goes down because we're giving like a side comment. The following expression is this. Listen.
There is one thing I've never heard a student say. I've never heard a student say, you know what my dream is when I grow up? Not having any of my dreams come true. Because that is something a child would never say, nor anyone else for that matter.
And of course, the expression is the last one, for that matter. Now, that expression means, in addition, concerning that topic or issue. It's basically when you want to extend what you say. For example, you can say, I didn't sleep well last night. I actually haven't slept well all week, for that matter. Normally, we use it at the end of the phrase, at the end of the sentence, but you can actually use it in the middle or any other position. Basically, the meaning is additionally. And we use for that matter. And this expression will come really handy when it comes to speaking exams. When you're giving examples and you're extending those examples and mentioning one last item that you still consider important, but it's additional to the main topic, you would say, for that matter. And what about this other expression?
Okay, truth be told, nobody has ever called me a giant. It just, there's not enough there to call it a giant.
The speaker said, truth be told, nobody has ever called me a giant. And the expression, of course, is truth be told. And the meaning is not really that different from what you can read, but the meaning is, I admit, to be honest, I have to confess. And what about these two other expressions? Listen.
And by the way, it's amusing to me that journalists and people, you know, before these attempts often, you know, ask me, well, are you going to go with any boats or any people or anything?
Nothing ultra bad's happened in my life up to now, you know.
Expressions such as by the way and up to now allow no variation. In some contexts, way, route, and road are closely synonymous, but there is no expression like by the road or by the route, which approximates to by the way, if you think about it. Similarly, expressions such as down to now or down from now are not items in the English lexicon, to be honest. Clearly, items such as by the way and up to now are invariable, indivisible. They're like word units, and they are words with spaces in them. I mean, like when you see them written down, you say by the way, they're separate. These polywords have exactly the same status in the language as individual words. Some applied linguists treat polywords as a separate class of lexical items, and honestly, I prefer to treat them as similar to simple words, that they are, at a best, they're a subcategory of words. What matters for the teacher and for the learner is awareness on polywords. They are nearly always very short. Sometimes two or three words. Sometimes there are more, but more often than not, there are usually two or three words. And they're very short phrases, which are obvious units. They're often, but by no means exclusively, adverbial phrases of different kinds. For example, you have sentence adverbs like on the other hand, in some ways, or expressions of time like the day after tomorrow, as I said before, every now and then. You also have prepositions of place, like on either side, upside down. The case of upside down is very interesting because in languages like Spanish, and I always make the comparison, in Spanish you say the expression al revés. And al revés can be said in different multiple ways, depending on the way in which something is the opposite. For example, if it's the up, it's down, then we say upside down. But if the inside is out, we say inside out. Or we can say on the other way around, or the other way round, as other people say. But the whole idea is that it's a unit. It's a complete unit of thought, and we don't think of the individual words in that unit. A further important and familiar category is compound nouns. I think I've talked about them before, where two words have been so closely bound to each other that dictionaries list them as single items, sometimes even according them headword status. Like, for example, prime number. You know what a prime number is. A prime number is a number that can only be divided by itself or one. And of course, a prime number is just a concept. I mean, we cannot say prime or we cannot say number, or words like nativity play. Speakers do not construct these items, but simply recall them. They bring them to memory as a unit and, you know, as a learned whole. Good dictionaries provide a source of polywords, I think, and language teachers, and this is, you know, my advice, we need to draw special attention to their particular word-like quality. The sentence adverbials, for example, are of particular importance of ensuring fluency in speech and coherence in writing. And I think this is basically the idea of my episode today, which is, you know, you can see that it's only, I'm going to be only talking about this. And that polywords in general, I think it's a very easy way of looking at all those categories of phrasal verbs, idioms, expressions, fixed phrases, that polywords can help you understand better that some groupings of words or some chunks, they have a word-like unit, characteristics or features that make you think of a group of words as a unit in itself. And this is all for today's episode. I think I wanted to make it short because if I overcomplicated stuff, I think it would be too much. And sometimes when I think that people are learning something new, I prefer to keep it short and sweet and not really overcomplicate things. I know it's like recycling some old knowledge that you may have, but the whole idea of bringing them up together in one simple concept, I think it's a little bit new for many people. And I just wanted to make it, you know, keep it short and just give a few examples. And remember that it's a fuzzy category. Sometimes it's very difficult to define what a polyword is. Sometimes they work together perfectly well. And other times it's just a very strong collocation. Sometimes we have words that you can think about it. I mean, if you can separate the two items or the three items in that group of words and you can still make sense of what is being said, then it's probably not a polyword. A polyword is that when you remove one of the elements, the concept is lost, like completely lost. And that's the whole idea. And remember that using these polywords, either in your writing and your speaking, will make you sound more natural in the speaking exam or the writing exam. And in your everyday life, of course, people will notice that you're sounding more fluent and you sound more natural in your communication every day. And remember that I'm still waiting for your recordings. Take the step and be brave. And if you want to have an interview with me or a mock exam, I'm going to perform a mock exam for C2 again with two former students. And I'm going to ask their permission to show it on the podcast. I think it's going to be great because they're both incredible people. And I'm just going to clear out their permission if they allow me to share it with everybody. I think it's going to be very, very interesting. They're great and they're taking the exam very soon. So they're a little nervous about it. And I think it's going to be awesome. So thank you very much for joining me this week. Until next week. Bye-bye.